I read, and to do with the wife's father, I did mention him earlier, him being a water girl born and bred from Kirk Farm, and there's a peculiar attitude towards the civilized end of the village. And it was a Saturday, and I arrived at something like 6 o'clock. In order to take what was eventually to become my wife to the theatre, where there was a stock company performing. And Abram, rest his soul, sat on the side of the fireplace. And behind his fire he nodded, "How do we?" By this greeting you realise that you weren't his mother. And he said,
I've been waiting such a long time for
you. I think I'm going home. And I said, "Yes, we're catching a bus to town. Theatre, I think." "Oh. Ah, well. Now then, what bus are you catching?" And I said, "Well, it's a great news. 7:15, I think. The second there was theatre agreed, 8 o'clock start." And I said, "Don't worry, who's got to catch bus anyway?" "How was that?" "Well, this time I'm not calling him father or anything. He didn't answer to mister. Would you just address the thing that's going back to him?" And well, see, he said, "Then I got to 25, I still have missing." "And if I go to the closet too, that's a long time away. I know the hell I kept his back, I said, "Well, by this time I missed his back. So what's to do?" He said, "If that we will, then set off at Jim's." "Well, Dylan," he said, "just a minute, let's talk about clock." "But time gets all fast," he said. "It's half an hour." "What a
good story."
"He said it seems to be all right." "And he said, I can look at the clock at 5. And next time I looked at it, inside 2 minutes it seems, it's getting to 5 o'clock. So I said, "No, that's not how I'm going to get to the theatre an hour." However, "Don't, you know, and I must require to not be offended at all." The story is that the meeting was 10 minutes loose. So it arrived at 1:30, 10 minutes fast. It hung at 1:30 until it was 10 minutes late. And then when it got to the hour, it flopped 10 minutes.
Oh, this story is good. Yeah.
It's a good story. Walter Sharp was the joiner at Eagle Raisin. He learned himself to speak because he stammered. And he was such a character, I think this explains the strength of his character, in that he did in fact learn to recite in order that he could speak, in order that he could, because he used to gag, you know, with embarrassing stuttering. And he took himself in hand literally and forced himself into a situation. His favourite poem was If, Kipling's If, because you can apply it to no matter what situation, no matter what Kipling wrote, you can make your own up almost with If. The story is concerned with finishing time on our way to the clocking out place. And we closed the shop, his joiner's shop being over my mechanic's shop. And as we walked up the yard, he said, "Damn it," he said, "it's the old tail, isn't it? Cobblers' kids are up and down about souls. Tailors' kids are up and down ragged arse. And here, joiner's wife has no firewood." I said, "To go back," he said, "because I've been cutting some of Hartnett. And there's been a gate on me." So we went back, climbed his stairs, me thinking to help. I thought, "Well, shall I take him off for you, Walter, at the far side of the saw?" Oh, I said, "Pile him up." And he went to a pile of wood that was floorboarding that had been taken up and was stacked to one side to do all sorts of jobs with. And he selected boards that were beyond reusing. And then set his saw at a given width and went zip, 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 zip. The board eventually comes to a place where there is a steam pipe come through the floor. And there's a hole in the board about this big. And he's cutting them off about this length. He comes to the hole where the saw is, and he takes a cut, zip, little bit, drags it on the floor, cuts the hole out, zip, little bit, then he goes on and zips, 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 till he's made about 18 pieces of timber that you might say is nice chopping wood. Ties them up with some string and sets off home, two parcels of about 9 apiece, like this, carrying two, one in each hand. As we got down the stairs, crossing the yard to the clocking out shop, I said, "Walter, what made you cut that all out of that timber? Why did you make a special cut for that all?" He said, "You can't light fires with holes." I said, "Yeah." Betty Crossley, Cora Crossley's great, great, great grandmother, I think, lived at Crook Farm, and she had the farm in her own name after becoming a widow. There is a photograph, a sepia photograph, of her in my possession, and she gives the impression of being vaguely Welsh. The headdress is tallish and stands behind her head. She's seated. There is a piece of glass in existence, a pane, a glass light out of a door. It's a similar size to these. And on it has been written with a diamond, "On the occasion of her husband's funeral, 1838, I think this is. It is written, the day it is on. And it says something like, outlived by many, overlived by none." And it's not signed, it's simply done on the spur of the moment, I think, as a credit to the man recently dead. In the Hamlet of Wardle rating book that I possess, she is the tenant of the farm. Her name appears as Betty Crossley, and this business of being widowed in such a date and having a farm in her own name later helps us to fix the date of this book, which is not dated. You know, the Hamlet of Wardle rates each holding, each parcel of land is laid down in terms of acres, rods and perches, and given a price, given a sort of pence something for rating value. And Betty Crossley stands there on her own account as being the farmer of that Crook farm. It was a good class farm in the sense that it was free of encumbrance from any other farm, and it backed on to its own moor right. Details at the manor office suggests that they were capable of summering some 1,000 sheep. You know, so that it was a fair-sized place, capable of earning some decent living. The only other connection with Crossley that comes down to recent years is when the Crossley who left Littletown, Jackson Crossley, to go to Wildhouse Farm in their mid to late 30s, he went to Wildhouse and vacated Littletown. But during his tenancy, or I would imagine he would own Littletown with Jackson Crossley, along with an erstwhile brother-in-law called Steele, there was some kind of closeness with them. Three men lived together. And it was a pretty well the only place that was any good at Watergrove at that time. Other than these people, they were small-time milk producers and producer retailers. And Jackson Crossley ran Littletown and Crook. And I think he would have a fair piece of land. I know he had a good piece of land because he grew potatoes that he used to take on his milk round, you know, and not many people in this district saw fit to do any arable at all. It was all grazer, producer, retailer, or sheep. Yeah. You'll find her grave at the front of the chapel. Next to her is a family called Bamford. Both of these people now become relatives of mine, partly because I married into Crossley's, and the other one is Maggie Bamford's mother. She was called Margaret Bamford. She was a blind lady that lived in next door to the pub in Smallbridge, Chapel House, and their daughter was Maggie Turner, and she was a cousin of my father. You know, Uncle Hugh Simpson was Hugh Bamford Simpson. This is the family connection. Nothing to do with the other Bamfords, is it? As far as I know, there's sort of three sets of Bamfords. And Tetet Crook and Maggie Bamford are the two graves at the front of the chapel, at the old Sunday school building here. Yeah.